We are back on the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Lindsay Patterson alongside Tyler Dragon, Charlie Goldsmith. You can find their work over on Cincinnati Inquirer. How are you guys doing?
Well, today has been a very busy day in the NFL world. I'll just say that. It started with more this morning with you know, COVID-19 tests with the Tennessee Titans, and you know, all across the football league, Lamar Jackson missed a second straight practice, and this Bengals team as well. Carlos Dunlap is disgruntled with his role on the team going into this week. So it's been a hectic day in the NFL world.
And Tyler, despite all of the hectic changes, I can confirm that there have been no starting lineup changes to the Bengals Beat podcast. So we are good to go for this week.
I didn't get demoted. Okay, that's good.
We are all still here right now, but let's get to it. Let's get to the news of the day. Carlos Dunlap. Again, Tyler started the press conference off with just, you know, a softball question, kind of getting into the game plan. And it really didn't go like everyone thought. Tyler, fill everyone in, because I'm also going to play some of the audio right here.
Yeah. So for those who listen to Bengals, you know, press conferences, I typically start off the press conferences, and every now and then I'll kind of switch it up and ask, you know, a chill, low key question. So today I asked, you know, a chill question about basketball. And the second question, well, while he was answering that question, I noticed that his mood wasn't really typical Carlos Dunlap. You know, even though the Bengals don't have a winning record, you know, he's typically in a good mood and, you know, honest and forthright. And so the second question, I got straight to football, and he basically revealed to us reporters who were on the Zoom conference call that the Bengals demoted him this week, and they are going forward with Carl Lawson as one of their edge rushers with Sam Hubbard. And, you know, they still have Dunlap in their game plan, and the plan is to have him in different personnel packages, but Carl Lawson was named the starter, and he was in most of their defensive personnel groupings. And from what I heard, what sources told me, is Dunlap took that as a slap in the face. You know, he's been with the franchise. This is his 11th season, two-time Pro Bowler, second all-time in franchise history in sacks. And he took that as, you know, the Bengals coaching staff really slapping him in the face and as disrespect. And he pretty much laid it all out on Thursday's Zoom press conference, and, you know, said that, you know, he did not agree with the decision, and, you know, there was a lack of respect that they didn't approach him in advance about their, you know, depth chart adjustment. And it was just really revealing. As a journalist, I am, I guess I would say I'm not happy, but it's good for, you know, the Inquirer and USA Today that we can write stories like that, that players are honest and forthright with speaking their mind and telling us how they feel. But, you know, as a former athlete, I would have kept that in-house and, you know, airing my frustrations to the coaching staff, but he handled it the way he handled it. And, you know, that's, everybody's different, but, you know, it does raise eyebrows that, you know, one of the best defensive players on the team for the last handful of years is now disgruntled. And, you know, he is upset that he is not firmly entrenched in this week's game plan versus the Baltimore Ravens.
So what's the objective, you know, of your defense? Is it to make them a passing football team? I mean, you really didn't answer there.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure it out, you know, honestly. We're pulling these pieces together, and I just learned some new pieces today, you know. So we're going to see how this plays out. Yeah, it's interesting.
You get new pieces today?
Yeah, shifting around the depth chart, you know.
So can you tell us what they are?
Well, it sounds like it's not going to be me in there. So I think they want a different run stopper. So I think we're going to give that to them.
So who's going to be starting in your spot then, if you don't mind us asking?
We're going to find out today at practice, I guess. I don't know. Just seems like this is what the coaches want. So they say I don't know what their thought is, but evidently focus on third down. So we got to get them third down with the young boys and do what I'm asked to do.
So you'll be primarily just coming in as a third down edge rusher. That's kind of your primary goal and what they're looking at, correct?
Not my primary goal, but it seemed like the goal in the game plan that was put in this week.
You obviously disagree with the coach's decision. I mean, yeah. how do you feel about, you know, what they're doing game plan wise this week?
I think we got a good game plan, but I would like to be a part of it.
When did they tell you that you wouldn't be starting? Was it just today?
They just put a depth chart on the board. They didn't really talk to me.
Would you have liked for them to talk to you in advance of that getting posted?
That's crazy, right? Yeah. I mean, you would think that common decency would be something like that. I mean, it's not like I'm injured or anything. Not nursing anything. I've been blessed. 11 years in the game. But I understand business, and evidently this is the business that they want to do. They're the coaches. I'm employee 96, as I've always said.
So you don't know why they did that? They haven't told you why?
Evidently, I didn't make enough tackles in the run game.
Did somebody tell you that?
I mean, it just, you know, put two and two together. That's the only thing that would make sense, you know, because I don't think my performance, I don't think I've slowed down. They just have these game plans, and I'm employee 96, and this is where I'm at in the plan.
Does this seem like a one-week thing or maybe a couple-week longer thing?
I don't know. They had tried to talk to me about something of it before the season started, but it was a miscommunication, so I don't know. I'm really trying to figure out the plan. It's kind of frustrating, you know, because, you know, I would like to just prepare for Baltimore, but I got to prepare to figure out how to handle the madness that they're doing.
One more minute with Carlos, guys.
Well, describe this miscommunication, kind of what happened at the beginning of the season that kind of put y'all off on the same, not on the right page.
Well, you know, my position coach was told that it was communicated to me that I wouldn't be starting. And here we are. I don't know. No one told me that. But in the beginning of the season, my position coach had told me that. And when I asked for clarification, it was said that that was never said. So I don't know where to go. That's a nice dog, Bill.
Do you still feel like you fit scheme-wise in this defense?
You can roll the tape and see.
So, Tyler, Lindsay, the longer you follow the Bengals, the more taglines you hear. For example, listening to the radio in Cincinnati, I am reminded that who day is a state of mind about once every 20 minutes. New day was something last year. Doing hard work with Marvin Lewis. These are phrases, catchphrases we often hear repeated. If this Bengals season and few, you know, this stretch that they're about to start, if that starts to spiral, I think that Carlos Dunlap provided the slogan to capture what's going on or what would happen. Carlos Dunlap today, I got to prepare to figure out how to handle the madness. Handle the madness. I've never heard an athlete say something that upfront, especially in Cincinnati. Now we'll probably discuss. We'll probably be discussing the rest of the season, the on-field ramifications of this move, whether or not it is the right move for Lawson to be in there instead of Dunlap. But my biggest takeaway is the off-field lack of communication that led to Carlos Dunlap seeing the depth chart today at practice and seeing his name wasn't on it. That's the kind of miscommunication that leads to someone reacting the way that he did today.
Yeah, Charlie, and that's kind of the way I'm looking at it. There's two ways to look at it when you look at this Carlos Dunlap, and I guess we could call it a demotion, is communication is so important because Carlos Dunlap was actually someone I talked to the last game of the season in the locker room, and he told me, hey, look, we're not pleased with the record. Winning two wins, it's not acceptable. but the culture is changing with Zach Taylor. And I just think that the communication needs to be there. Carlos Dunlap has been with this team for 11 years. And for him to not really know or feel a certain way is really telling. And for him to make it pretty public in a Zoom interview for us to hear, I think was pretty telling. When you look at the numbers, I could see why the Bengals wanted to try Carl Lawson. What I'm surprised with is they're doing it right before the Baltimore Ravens game. I mean, if you look at Carlos Dunlap, according to PFF, he had 6 defensive stops. Dunlap in the other 3 games, 0 defensive stops. He's had 9 total pressures on 128 pass attempts. So he's not producing right now. And again, he's 11 years in the league. So I totally understand if you're going to see a little bit of decline. But the Bengals are changing it up. And Zach Taylor is proving he isn't afraid to bench someone. And not even bench him, because Carlos Dunlap will be a part of the package in the defensive game plan on Sunday. But you saw that with Andy Dalton last year. I mean, he benched Andy Dalton and started Ryan Finley. And I just think when you look at this coaching staff, they're not afraid to make those moves. It's really just kind of how they did it and no communication there. But Tyler, you and I actually talked about it in the preview video. I guess I'm just surprised it happened before Baltimore.
Yeah, it is surprising because, you know, the Ravens are probably the most talented team on the Bengals' schedule. And this is a big decision. Because if you are going to, you know, demote, you know, one of your best defensive players over the last several years, usually it's hard to come back from that when you make that decision. And, you know, it just feels as though that the Bengals should have, at bare minimum, told him prior to announcing it in front of the team. Because they pretty much wrote the depth chart on a whiteboard. And that's how Carlos Dunlap found out. But, you know, as you just said, going up against the Baltimore Ravens, we all know this team struggled against the Ravens last year. But, you know, Dunlap provides a veteran presence. He's experienced. And, you know, I just think even though he's had a down start to the season, out of respect for, you know, what he's done and, you know, his overall ability, I still think you go with him in the starting lineup. But the Bengals coaching staff decided otherwise, at least for this week.
I used to cover a team where the starting quarterback was unclear from week to week. And every week we had no idea who was going to start. And the coach basically was confided in us. He ended up saying, you know, I wish quarterbacks didn't have to play every snap. Otherwise, this wouldn't be a story every week. And that made me think of Dunlap, because we're still going to be seeing a lot of him. You know, for example, take last week. Last week, Carlos Dunlap had 51 snaps. Carl Lawson had 44. If they trade roles, if they swap roles, they're still playing about almost equally. Just maybe you'll see Lawson in one or two extra packages where you used to see Dunlap. One guess that I have for why, you know, there wasn't a huge meeting between Taylor, Tobin, and Dunlap or anything like that was because it's possible this isn't even that much of a demotion. If it's only a 6 or 7 snap demotion and the only difference is an official title, I do see the other perspective in not trying to make as big a deal out of it as it seems, as it would be for a position like quarterback. If all of a sudden Carlos Dunlap wouldn't be playing anymore, that's a very big deal. But it's possible that we're going to be seeing almost the exact same amount of Carlos Dunlap. So in that way, maybe this isn't as big a deal as it's being played out to be.
I think another storyline when we're recording this on Thursday is the injury report. Some good news when it comes to linebacker Logan Wilson. He was dealing with a concussion last week. He was a full participant, so expect him to go against the Baltimore Ravens. But what we're seeing is Geno Atkins is still limited. Joe Mixon was added to the report today, and I think people are still circling it. I'm hearing it's not a big deal, but Jonah Williams limited all week due to a shoulder injury, and everyone knows he was out last season due to a shoulder. Should there be any area of concern when you look at the limited list for the Bengals?
You know, I would not be too concerned. If I had to make an educated guess on Geno Atkins, my guess would be he would not play this week. When he's going on those individual reps in practice, he is last in line to get that rep. And, you know, that is an indication to me that he is not expected in, you know, the defensive rotation, because usually the starters and the second string, they are the first to get those individual reps in practice. As far as, you know, the other injuries, Jonah Williams, it is, it does make you pause that he is on the injury report with the shoulder injury, because he missed all of his rookie season with, you know, a shoulder ailment, and, you know, has surgery on that shoulder. But I do think that is, you know, just precautionary reasons and just sore. As far as Joe Mixon, I think that, again, is another precautionary measure. I do expect him in the lineup. Mackenzie Alexander, he's been upgraded this week. I do expect him to be back in the fold. So as far as the injuries, I wouldn't be too concerned. I do expect Logan Wilson to be back in the lineup, as well as Mackenzie Alexander. But when it comes to Geno Atkins, you know, my educated guess is he will still be inactive this week.
So as Tyler mentioned, there is reason for optimism with Alexander and Mackenzie Alexander and Logan Wilson. And I think that is especially important considering the matchup. When you look at the players the Bengals added over the offseason, Alexander and Wilson were probably the two most important ones to face Lamar Jackson. Logan Wilson is someone who in college was one of the steadiest tacklers in college football, while possessing an athleticism that made him a defensive back recruit coming out of high school. And Mackenzie Alexander, he didn't miss a tackle last year. The Bengals signed him because of his ability to defend in the slot and to make plays in the run game. Those were huge components in why they brought that player in. You know, him and Wilson both, this is the moment where the Bengals need them to show that they are more capable of stopping Lamar Jackson than they were last year. Lamar was better against the Bengals than any other quarterback they faced. And having those guys in better position to play should be a good test to see how much this defense has really improved with those additions.
I think we look ahead to this Baltimore team. Even if you look at injuries on the Baltimore side, that list is long on Thursday. That includes quarterback Lamar Jackson. At the moment, he is expected to play as of now. I know he's dealing with an illness, and he was just kind of a minor injury, as ESPN reported yesterday. How can the Bengals stop Lamar Jackson, and do they have a shot at pulling this one off?
Well, as I say, there's, you know, a church next to that stadium there in Baltimore. You got to go there and pray. you know, you have to be able to keep Lamar Jackson in the pocket. He cannot break contain. The defensive ends, now we know that's going to be a lot of Carl Lawson and Sam Hubbard. They cannot let Jackson get outside of him and, you know, get outside that pocket and start scrambling, because he will break their hearts again if he is able to do that. And you have to stack the box, force the Ravens to be a passing team. That's easier said than done, but we've seen if you make the Ravens one-dimensional and make Lamar Jackson drop back and pass all the time, he has not shown the ability to consistently win games that way. So you want to make them a passing football team. I would also spy Jackson from time to time. I would spy him with, you know, Von Bell on occasion, and sometimes Jermaine Pratt. You know, you have to try to limit the amount of scrambling opportunities for him, rushing yards for him as well. And then, you know, also, you know, Mark Ingram and those, you know, those running backs, you cannot let them, you know, run down your throat if you're the Bengals. So make them a passing football team. They have the 31st ranked pass offense in the National Football League, and that's because they're not a great passing team right now. So that's what you have to do for the Bengals defense in order to beat them.
So personally, I hope Lamar plays just because, you know, for football's sake, it's better when you have the MVP active on the field. But I would be curious to see what the Bengals would look like against the Ravens offense run by either Robert Griffin III or Trace McSorley. Those are two very mobile quarterbacks who don't have the MVP wow factor that Lamar Jackson has. So that would almost be an even better test to see whether or not the Bengals are capable of defending a quarterback who defending a really focused on the run offense because obviously with Jackson, they can do both. If they couldn't stop an offense led by RG3 or Trace McSorley, that would expose even deeper issues than the MVP quarterback that Jackson is. But yeah, it's going to be an incredibly difficult matchup if Jackson's available. You know, we've asked in these Zoom press conferences all week, you know, the importance of stopping the run versus the pass. And at the end of the day, it's both. You almost have to expect Lamar Jackson to make a certain amount of plays during the game and create a number of explosive plays for Baltimore. That's just who he is at this point.
Round one, Bengals and Ravens this Sunday at Baltimore. We're 3-0 at the moment from last week, but looking ahead, I'm actually going to take Baltimore in this one 35-21. What do you guys say?
I'm surprised you're picking the Ravens against your Bengals.
They're not my Bengals.
I'm just joking, Miss Optimistic. I'm joking. You know, I have the score a little bit closer than you, but I still have the Ravens getting the W. I have Baltimore winning at home 31-20. I just think this is a bad matchup for the Bengals. The Bengals struggle stopping the run, and that's Baltimore's strength. And I am not going to pick the Bengals against the Ravens until they show me that they can actually beat them. And Lamar Jackson is 3-0 as starter versus the Bengals. So I have Baltimore winning at home and a fairly easy contest for them.
I have Baltimore winning 35-20. I think the most important factor in this, in addition to Lamar Jackson's game-changing ability, is that the Ravens are really good at taking away some of the things the Bengals do best. For example, they have one of the best slot corners in the league who can defend Tyler Boyd throughout the game. And on top of that, you know, it's less likely that Joe Mixon will be able to explode up the middle and on the right side like he did against Jacksonville against someone like Calais Campbell. So as I mentioned, I think Joe Burrow is going to continue to impress. I think there should be the first of many matchups between Burrow and Jackson over the next decade. But Jackson takes round one.
All right, guys, plenty on Cincinnati.com. As we mentioned, a lot of Carlos Dunlap news, three keys to the game. Charlie gets a look at Joe Burrow's five interesting throws each week. You're going to want to go check it out. But, guys, what did I miss? What's on Cincinnati.com?
Well, you mentioned a lot, but Zach Taylor said that, you know, A.J. Green's time will come. He's been quiet thus far this season, so I have a story about that on Cincinnati.com. And also, the Bengals are actually going to Baltimore with a little bit of confidence and momentum. So that should bode well for them in, you know, this rivalry game against the Ravens.
I have a feature up on Joe Burrow. That was a lot of fun to report. Obviously, him and Lamar are two of the best young quarterbacks in football right now. Well, 6 years ago, they weren't even one of the 18 best quarterbacks in their age. I wrote about the quarterback camp and the snub that ties Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow.
Make sure you check it out. E&Q Sports over on Twitter, E&Q Bengals on the Instagram. The guys have plenty pre and post game leading up to Baltimore round one. We also have a BBP extra coming up, a look from the PFF side, Austin Gale, and the Ravens from Clifton Brown. Thank you for listening to the Bengals Beat Podcast. We're back on the Bengals Beat Podcast. I'm Lindsay Patterson, and every week I'm joined by the guys over at PFF. This week, Austin Gale. Austin, how you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Plenty to talk about with this Cincinnati Bengals team, because if you go to PFF right now, just on the Twitter alone, a lot of top Bengals on the offensive side. So we'll start with that first. We always start with the offensive line. So they had a good day. We'll go ahead and get to it right now. They had Alex Redmond at right guard. And by good day, I mean above average, Austin. They had Alex Redmond over there at right guard, Bobby Hartsell at right tackle. Jonah Williams is really starting to show up in the last four games. How did they look on Sunday?
Yeah, Jonah Williams is really, you know, hitting his stride. You have to remember that this was a very highly coveted first-round pick out of Alabama when he was drafted, one that I was a big fan of, PFF was a big fan of. Yes, he had the short arms, but he is living up to that first-round billing. He earned the highest pass blocking grade of any Bengal against the Jacksonville Jaguars in week four with an 84.5 grade, only allowed one pressure on the day. He and Trey Hopkins had a good day as well. You spoke to Alex Redmond, Michael Jordan, the only real liability right now is Bobby Hart. Right now, he ranks second to last among all offensive tackles in pressure percentage allowed. It is hard to watch. It's hard to watch at this point. I mean, this is Bobby Hart. This is a guy that we talk about, I feel like, every single year that is still a liability for this Bengals offensive line. I can't imagine a Bengals team that trots out Bobby Hart in 2021 to protect Joe Burrow. I just think his time has passed in Cincinnati.
Well, look at the ground game. This is a game that the Bengals have been waiting for since week one to really balance out the offense. So Joe Burrow is not throwing it up in the air every game. And Joe Mixon had himself a game. He got in the end zone 3 times. How did Mixon look on Sunday?
Yeah, Mixon looked great. I mean, Mixon very rarely doesn't look good. The problem has been that he doesn't get any help from the offensive line. Going into week four, he averaged 0.66 yards before contact per carry. That's bottom three in the NFL. Now through 4 weeks, he's looking a lot better. And in this game specifically, obviously 25 attempts for 151 yards, 4 runs of 10 plus yards. That's stuff you haven't seen from Joe Mixon because he really hasn't been given the opportunity. I thought the tight ends blocked really well in this game. Jacksonville Jaguars defense isn't a world beater by any means, but it's still encouraging to see when you give him some room, when you give him some opportunity to make plays, he can do it. That's what you saw from Joe Mixon on Sunday.
Joe Burrow, I feel like with every game he gets better, if that's even possible, what he's been dealing with the offensive line, and they finally protect him a little bit on Sunday. I know they were going up against Jacksonville, but Joe Burrow after 4 games, I'm going to ask you this question that's been on social media, and I threw it at my guy Tyler Dragon this week. Is Joe Burrow playing like a top 10 quarterback?
Yes, absolutely. According to PFF, he ranks 9th in PFF grade through 4 weeks. The only concern I have with Joe Burrow, and you're picking at him a little bit here, is just the deep ball hasn't been there. In this game, he didn't complete a single deep pass. That's 20-plus air yards. He attempted 6 of them, but I don't think he has the timing right. The accuracy hasn't been there. He's leading guys out of bounds. It doesn't look like the Joe Burrow we saw at LSU. He was one of the most accurate – no, not one of the most – the most accurate passer throwing the ball deep downfield in the SEC with LSU in 2019. We haven't seen that Joe Burrow yet. I'm sure it will come in the NFL, just not of late. I do think that his arm talent isn't up there with the best in the NFL, and safeties are faster in the NFL. That's causing some concern there, but I do think you'll see him improve there. But right now, he is a top 5 quarterback in PFF grade when throwing 19 or fewer air yards or through fewer yards downfield. It speaks to his accuracy. It speaks to his anticipatory throwing, anticipation from the pocket, from clean and when pressured. When blitzed against the Jacksonville Jaguars, which only happened on 9 dropbacks, he earned a 91.8 PFF passing grade. He handles pressure well. He handles out of structure well. I really do think the Cincinnati Bengals have something in Joe Burrow. It's not perfect yet, but he continues to get better every single week. It's something fun to build around.
How can he really work on that? Because they're still working on that explosive big play, and one of them was called back to Tyler Boyd in the end zone just this past Sunday. How can he work on that big play and just kind of make those bigger throws?
I think, one, he needs time in the pocket for the routes to develop. Right now, the offensive line is not doing him any favor. So he's forcing some deep throws a little bit earlier than expected. He's leading guys when he shouldn't be. I think if the offensive line protected better for Joe Burrow, you'd see more success throwing the ball downfield. Because I don't think it's the arm talent that's the driving issue. His accuracy is obviously fantastic. I think it's timing, comfortability in the pocket, letting routes develop. That stuff I don't think will come until he has some confidence in the front five.
We'll go to the wide receiver room because you called it before the season started. Justin Jefferson was obviously one of his favorite targets at LSU, and you really had that in Tyler Boyd, and we're seeing it this season. I'd say he's number one receiver. Tyler Boyd's pretty high on the PFF rankings right now.
Yeah, he looks fantastic, and I think he's going to continue to get fed in this offense. Like I said before the season, he's going to fill that Justin Jefferson role for Joe Burrow and working the slot, finding those open holes and zones. Right now, 28 receptions on 33 targets for 320 yards and 1 touchdown. I think he's not going to be a big yards after catch guy. He's not going to be a guy that has this explosive dynamism like a Tyreek Hill type. But what he does do well is consistently get open, find hole and zone, and never drop the football. Only 1 drop so far this year. That is super encouraging for Tyler Boyd. Obviously, Joe Burrow's top target.
Right now, I'd say it's pretty easy call to say T. Higgins is the number 2 receiver. Have you been impressed with the rookie?
Oh, man, nothing but impressed for T. Higgins. I did not expect him. At Clemson, I think he struggled a bit at some things. I thought it would take him some time to adjust to the NFL. But, I mean, I'm getting some Chad Ochocinco vibes seeing that number 85 number make some plays now. Obviously, 12 receptions from 22 targets, 152 yards, and 2 TDs. You know what you do see with T. Higgins is the comfortability. I think Joe Burrow and T. Higgins have a lot of chemistry throwing, you know, pitch and catch to each other. He's also really good in contested catch situations. He, too, only 1 drop on the year. I think T. Higgins is going to be another rookie that gets better every single week for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Is AJ Green going to come back?
This has been a tough go for AJ Green because from an air yards perspective, he's getting targets, he's getting fed down the football field, but struggling a bit in contested catch situations. I think he has 2 drops on the season. He doesn't look in sync. He's battling injuries. I feel like he's getting up slow every play. I definitely think Father Time is getting after AJ Green. I think the injuries are starting to stack up for him. I'm still really encouraged by The ability to create separation, the ability to get downfield and make plays, I think I still see that from AJ Green. However, I still feel like in these contested catch situations and that stuff that he formerly was great at, you're not seeing the same AJ Green. Some concern there after the past 2 weeks for sure.
They're without Geno Atkins for the first four games. There is a chance he's back in Baltimore, but Carl Lawson has really stepped up this year when the team has really had a hard time getting to the quarterback. Have you been impressed with him?
Yeah, I think he's played well. A 68.5 PFF pass rushing grade on the year, 11 total pressures, second behind Sam Hubbard on the team. I think he's a guy that can win at the snap. Sam Hubbard's a guy that's a high effort guy. There's a reason he has 12 pressures but only a 49.2 pass rushing grade. It's because he's not winning early in the snap. Carl Lawson has the athletic ability and the pass rush move skill set to win early in the snap and actually affect the passer within 3 seconds of the play. I think that is super important for him. Unfortunately, he's practically doing it by himself. You know, you're not seeing that same success from Carlos Dunlap and other defensive tackles for the Cincinnati Bengals. What was formerly a strength for this team, now without Geno Atkins, Carlos Dunlap doesn't have the same step he had a few years ago. Sam Hubbard's still a very high effort, high motor player, but not an elite premier pass rusher. Carl Lawson is kind of on an island in that he's one of the only pure dynamic pass rushers for this team. I think it's an area of need that they have to address in the offseason and even maybe the draft.
How do you feel the secondary has fared so far this season?
I think I've been honestly really impressed, obviously, with Jesse Bates. Jesse Bates is one of the highest graded safeties in football right now, an 89.3 coverage grade so far this year, has allowed just 5 receptions for 40 yards in coverage and also logged 5 passes defense. In addition to that, I think William Jackson isn't having the year he had a few years ago when he had ranked inside the top 5 in PFF coverage grade, but he's having a much better year, a 71.3 PFF coverage grade through 2 weeks, only allowed 15 receptions for a total of 163 yards, including 2 touchdowns and a pick. He's not getting his hands on the football. That's why his grade isn't as good. You know, he has 0 passes defense so far this year, but what he is doing is limiting targets and always staying in the receiver's hip pocket. I think William Jackson is having a better season than maybe the box score suggests.
How is this team going to contain Lamar Jackson on Sunday?
There is no containing Lamar Jackson, Lindsay. I think it's only – I always say this too. I say this with Lamar Jackson, and I say this with Patrick Mahomes. Do not create a game plan that expects to limit them significantly. What you have to do is score offensively. And that's what you've seen with Lamar Jackson. You know, that you have that trend now. He's 0-6 in games where he's trailing by 2 scores at any point in the game. You have to put up points against the Baltimore Ravens. If you let them be two-dimensional, let them run Gus Edwards, Mark Ingram, J.K. Dobbins down your throat, it's not going to work. You're going to really struggle to contain this offense. But if you score, if you find ways to get points on the board, that's how you limit Lamar Jackson. That's how you beat this Baltimore Ravens team.
So a Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow shootout on Sunday. Are you calling it right now?
I don't know if I'll see a shootout. I will say that the Baltimore Ravens defense did not look as good as I thought they would against Dwayne Haskins and the Washington football team. However, I don't know if Cincinnati Bengals have that same look. I think the offensive line is significantly worse than what Washington is putting out. I think those receivers are going to struggle a bit creating separation against Marcus Peters, Marlon Humphrey, and company. Marlon Humphrey, I'll say it right now, is one of my favorite players in the NFL, let alone cornerbacks. And I think he's going to have a field day match and mirroring Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, whoever it may be.
It'll be a fun one, round one for the Bengals and the Ravens this coming Sunday. As always, Austin Gale, PFF, what's up on PFF?
Yeah, go check out pff.com. Right now we're running a promo code GAMEDAY25 for 25% off any subscription. We're covering fantasy, DFS, betting, player props, and, of course, NFL and college football analysis. A lot of fun going on at pff.com.
And like I just mentioned, if you head over to PFF over on Twitter, there are plenty of Bengals up after this past Sunday's win and Joe Burrow's first victory. Thanks again, Austin Gale, for joining us.
Of course, thank you.
And now on the Bengals Beat podcast, we have Clifton Brown of Ravens.com. He does an excellent job of covering the Baltimore Ravens. Clifton, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine, Tyler. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. There's a big AFC North matchup this weekend. You know, the Bengals, they're coming off a win. It's few and far to come by from this Bengals team, but they are feeling more confident and motivated heading up against, you know, the reigning division champs. On the injury report, though, for the Ravens, I've noticed, and everybody's pretty much noticed, Lamar Jackson has not practiced this week. Is he expected to play against the Bengals?
Well, all the reports you read say that it's a minor knee injury. So, yeah, Lamar has not missed a game due to injury his entire career. And when he talked to the media Wednesday, he did not mention the injury, but, you know, his demeanor did not look like a guy who was concerned about playing Sunday. Now, you know, the fact that he hasn't practiced for two straight days, I think is more concerning than him taking just Wednesday off. But if you're asking me at this moment, do I think he's going to play? The answer is yes. I think the bigger question would be, is he going to be 100% when he does play, or will he, you know, not be quite up to 100%? And if he's not, how will that affect, you know, maybe even the Ravens game plan as far as much, you know, how much he could run the football and things like that?
Yeah, you know, the Bengals clearly struggle against Lamar Jackson running the football. If his knee is ailing, you probably have to, you know, hand the football off to Mark Ingram and those running backs, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, which could not necessarily a bad thing for the Ravens. But, yeah, I mean, you know, we've seen some tremendous Lamar highlights against the Bengals. You know, touchdown runs, that 360 spin move he had last year. I mean, I don't think the Bengals will be upset if Lamar's not 100%. That's for sure.
Yeah, and the Ravens have had multiple players on their injury report this week. Marcus Peters, Jimmy Smith. Is there a concern that those two corners won't be in the lineup this weekend?
I don't think so. I think that's more precautionary as well. Jimmy's been on the injury list, or on the injury report, I should say, a lot with the knee. So that's not unusual. He's a vet. He's the type of guy who could certainly play well without practicing during the week, and that's been the case this year as far as it really hasn't affected him and seeing it on Sunday. So I think Jimmy will be out there. Marcus is new, but again, another durable player, really hard to keep him off the field. So we don't know until Sunday, but I think that, yeah, I would be surprised if those guys aren't in the lineup as well.
Yeah, and speaking of the cornerback position in the Ravens' pass defense, they've kind of struggled this year. They rank in the bottom of the league in pass defense. Is that because, you know, they played the Kansas City Chiefs early in the season? You know, what's the cause of their struggles, you know, in that side of the football in pass defense?
Yeah, I think the Kansas City game obviously skewed things a little bit in that direction, a little misleading. Also, you know, Ravens have had a lot of leads, and teams have had to catch up. You know, Cleveland, the opener, Houston week two, you know, you're playing from in front. You know, guys like, you know, quarterbacks like Baker Mayfield and Deshaun Watson, they're going to get their numbers in those situations. But it's certainly not like the Ravens have been shredded through the air. They might have the best corner combo between Peters and Marlon Humphrey in the league. And, yeah, it's not like teams have been moving up and down the field on them through the air. So, yeah, I think that's misleading. The defense has been good. The biggest issue with their defense has been the pass rush, which will be interesting against the Bengals, because I know even though the Bengals played well and got their first win last week, that pass protection has been an issue for Cincinnati. So can the Bengals keep the Ravens pass rush away from Burrow, or will they, you know, pressure him and force him to throw it before he wants to? I think that's a big storyline in this game.
Yeah, the Ravens are known to blitz a lot. Even Joe Burrow said this week that they are expecting the Ravens to dial up the blitz plenty of times this weekend. Are you expecting the same against, you know, a rookie quarterback?
I do. Not so much because Joe's a rookie, but because that's what they do. Mm-hmm. I mean, even with Mahomes, they talk about dialing it back, but it's just in their DNA. I mean, that's the way the Ravens like to be the aggressor. They really like to, you give quarterbacks a lot of different looks. And of course, you know, Joe Burrow being in his first year, they have to think, even though obviously what he's done is very impressive, that he hasn't seen everything the Ravens want to throw at him. So yes, I do think they're going to test him.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of Joe Burrow, his teammate at LSU, Patrick Queen, was first round picked by the Baltimore Ravens. Has the team been impressed with him thus far this season?
They have. You know, obviously this year with all rookies, just like Joe Burrow, it's been an unusual season in that they were robbed of a lot of time during the offseason to get ready. But Queen's been the starter since day one. He played really well last week against Washington. He struggled, as the Ravens defense did against Mahomes, but he bounced back with his best game of the season. I think that's a really good sign for a young player early in his career that when he faced adversity, he really bounced back the next week. So, yeah, Queen is really fast as a linebacker, really good tackler, had a great goal line tackle against Washington. Yeah, so he's fast and physical. Pass coverage, he's good. Like all rookies, sometimes, you know, he'll take the bait, and I think the Bengals might try and, you know, give him some misdirection on routes and fool him. But once he knows where the ball is, Queen gets there. And just like, you know, they've had some great linebackers here in the past in Baltimore, I think Queen has a chance to be a great one if he stays healthy. I think he's that good.
Yeah. Well, let me get back to the offensive side of the football before I get you out of here. The Bengals' defense, it is pretty obvious that they want to make the Ravens a one-dimensional passing team. The Ravens have struggled passing the football this year. They're only averaging 180 yards per game. Has Lamar Jackson developed enough, in your opinion, passing the football? Why have they, you know, struggled out the gate passing?
I think some of it's on Lamar. I mean, he had a great week one and to me hasn't played or thrown the ball quite as well since. Some of it, you know, has been that he's been on the run a little bit this year. Pass protection, you know, hasn't been as consistent. And, you know, once you get a quarterback to move, you know, his numbers usually go down a little bit. And also, I just think that, you know, they've just been a little bit off on some of the big plays that have been there. Teams don't want Lamar running the football. They don't want the Ravens controlling the ball with the football. So the opportunity to take deep shots are there. Last year, I think they just did a better job on the deep ball than they have so far early this year. But if I'm the Bengals, I'd be wary of, you know, Marquise Brown, their main deep threat. And also, I think Devin Duvernay is a guy to watch, too, as the season progresses. Another guy with a lot of speed, because the Ravens, I think the way teams are defending them, they've got to take some shots downfield. And if they capitalize on them, that could really change the course of the game. If they don't, then you can get away with playing them that way and trying to keep Lamar in their running game boxed in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, the Ravens swept the season series last year. This first game between the two clubs this year. Who do you expect to win the Week 5 matchup?
Yeah, I mean, this will be a shocker. You know, I do expect the Ravens to win. I like what the Bengals are doing. I just think the Ravens have been so good over the past couple of years of not overlooking anybody. I mean, that's why they finished 14-2 last year. Obviously, you're a good team if you do that, but you just avoid those weeks where you lay an egg, you know, where you think, oh, we don't have to play our best to beat this team and not mentally ready. The Ravens don't seem to do that. Now, you know, coming off a win, if there was ever time for a letdown, you know, the Ravens coming off a win at home against a team that they've had their way with, you would think, okay, maybe this might be the week, but I think that's where the respect for Burrow might hurt the Bengals. I mean, you hear players, I haven't heard any players say that they're not impressed with Burrow. Now, I don't think they're just blowing smoke because he's this week's opponent. So I think the defense knows they have to be ready for Joe Burrow. With Lamar's situation, if he is not 100%, then obviously everyone else on offense is going to feel like they have to pick up the slack for him. So I don't look for the Ravens to have a letdown. If they're playing, you know, at their best or near their best at home, I don't think the Bengals have quite enough yet to knock them off.
What's your final score prediction?
I'm going to go with Ravens 27, Bengals 16. I think it'll be a game, you know, into the second half. Again, I like the way Cincinnati's playing, but I just think between a running game and a couple of big plays, the Ravens will have enough.
Okay. Well, we appreciate you coming on the podcast here today. Where can everybody follow your work?
They can follow me at BaltimoreRavens.com. And I've actually launched a new podcast called Black in NFL, which had its debut on Tuesday, where I'll be talking about race and social justice issues, having players and other people as guests on the Ravens website. So, yeah, you can find all my work at BaltimoreRavens.com.
Okay, well, thanks for telling everybody about your new podcast. I'm looking forward to listening to that and where to follow your work. We appreciate having you on today.
Thanks so much, Tyler.